Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Specsavers. If you've got something to say, call Liveline. If you want expert, affordable eye care, talk to Specsavers.
1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, I'm Damien O'Reilly and this is Liveline. Neil Turbine, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Damien.
Mick Lally, 64 years of age. Yeah. A sad, sad passing of a man you knew very well.
Yes, and very, very sad because he was very, very young. And it's an awful pity that he had to go so soon. But he had accomplished more, I suppose, in the time that he had than many other people would have in twice the time. So God be good to him. He was a great actor, great personality, a great part of the Irish scene, really, because everybody knew him, everybody loved him, and I don't mean this in a sort of derogatory way or anything, but it didn't matter what he was playing, they would have believed the part. You know what I mean? Yeah. As long as it was Mick, it was grand. And that's a wonderful tribute to pay him. You know, everybody in Ireland would pay money to see Mick, no matter what he was doing.
Yeah, the great skill.
Wonderful, great warmth and tremendous talent and everything. But it's that wonderful warmth and the way that people identified with him, you know, and thought that he was part of us, a very big part of us, you know.
I heard the Pat Kenny show this morning, I think it was Alan Stanford, and really summed it up when he said that his great skill was that he acted, but he didn't look like he was trying to act.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you can't do that, you have no business being an actor at all, yeah. If I may say so.
No, but I know what he means.
Yeah. I mean, I know what he means, yeah. Hmm. It was... He had a wonderful skill. I'm sure I'm just saying in another way what Alan Stanford said, was that he could fit himself into the character, or the other way, he could fit the character into himself. He still appeared to be Mick Lally, you know, but he created a new character, you know, because, I mean, in real life, he wasn't a bit like Miley, for instance, you know.
Yeah. And
except in appearance, of course.
Exactly. And there was that sort of earthiness about him in real life. He's a man I didn't meet. I met maybe once or twice, but even watching him on television and being interviewed or on the radio, I mean, the whole Miley Byrne, the Bracken and Glen Rowe TV series, it catapulted him into the whole business of fame, and that was something he wasn't comfortable about.
Yeah, because Mick actually was quite a radical, you know. Politically, Mick would have been very far to the left and very much, I suppose, the very opposite of the innocent Miley, you know, the simple boy. And Mick was he was a very intellectual man, you know. He's tremendously well educated. He was a teacher. He was, you know, the physical appearance of Miley had nothing to do with Mick Lally, really. You know, I mean, he was a very, very highly intelligent man and a very humorous man, very funny man. And but people who never met him would sort of automatically think of Miley, which is a great tribute to him.
Yeah, how did that sit with him? I mean, you know, the idea that everybody knew him as Miley, did that get to him in the end, because he achieved so much more in his acting career apart from the role that he played then?
Well, I don't know. I suppose he found it irritating now and again, for instance. I mean, not comparing myself with Mick in any way, but I mean, I played Brendan Behan so often that people say hello Brendan to me occasionally, you know. And it used to irritate me, and then I felt, well, no, you know, I mean, it means that I was at least, you know, established that I was that character, and so it's a tribute to me as an actor. And I'm sure Mick would feel the same way, although he probably was very irritated from time to time.
Yeah.
You know, because after all, Mick was a highly intellectual man, very, very, you know, he was politically very, very aware. He was a great man to have an argument with and so forth. So, and I suppose it might be irritating to somebody of his intellectual ability to be mistaken for the simple country boy. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose a simple irony. I mean, he was a self-confessed atheist and talked about organized religion as cotology and all of that. Yet people will remember his famous catchphrase, "Holy God."
Well, that is ironic, I suppose.
Eunice McMenamin is on the line
as
well.
Eunice, if Mick arrived in heaven and greeted, well, holy God.
He would get a shock. Yeah. Eunice, good afternoon to you. Stay with me, please, Neil, if you don't mind. Eunice is there. And how are you, Eunice? You're Fidelma, again, I suppose people still call you Fidelma when they meet you on the street.
They do, yeah, they do, occasionally, all right. Especially down the country, I suppose, more so than Dublin, but down the country now, she's still alive and kicking.
She is. And, I mean, she was the person that got Miley into trouble.
Am I getting the blame? I am, yeah. Yeah, well, I suppose they had talked about it for a long time, whether they would run the storyline between Saddam and Miley, and when they went ahead with this, it caught a lot of people by surprise, you know, but it went down quite well.
But did people, you know, confront you on the street over it?
Because
Miley was so well loved in Irish homes all over the country.
This is it. I was a home wrecker, and it was all down to me, and how dare I destroy a perfectly good marriage, you know. And it was people believed us. They really, really thought it was real. You know, they got so engrossed in the storyline that they just presumed it. And like you were saying, that you get people, you know, think you are the character, you know, and he, I'm sure Mick got it everywhere that he was lambasted, you know, for it too.
Yeah. Eunice, you would have been fairly young when you joined Glenroe.
Yeah.
You were there for a number of years. What was it like working with somebody like Mick at that stage? How helpful was he to you,
he was
on the
dose,
set?
An absolute dose. He's such a gentleman. He really, really was. He was so kind and so... so much fun on the set as well, you know. And he was gassed, though, because what he came out with wasn't necessarily what the script was. So you were kept on your toes sometimes with him. You weren't too sure what way he was going to throw a line at you, which was good training as well. But he was such a gentleman, and very, very kind, and very, very warm, and very, very funny. Yeah. Absolutely funny.
He'd be sorely missed. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. I mean, the phone hasn't stopped hopping this morning. People are just gutted, absolutely gutted. And I want to send my love and condolences now to Peggy and the family, because it must be just such a horrendous time for them.
Yeah. Kate Thompson is there too. Good afternoon to you, Kate.
Good afternoon, Damien.
A sad day.
It's very sad. It was one of those moments. I turned the news on at 10 o'clock and the first thing I heard was death of an actor, and I was half expecting it to be, you know, some Hollywood luminary or, you know, some elderly granddam in London. And when I heard that it was somebody who I knew and loved and respected and who lives just up the road from me, it was very deeply shocking.
And, I mean, what about, you know, the old cast of Glenroe? Did you keep in touch? Did you come across Mick much since Glenroe finished?
No, not Mick so much, because Mick wasn't the most outgoing person sociably. The girls, the actresses, keep in touch, as Eunice will know. We meet up for lunch once or twice a year. But Mick would have been very welcome to come as an honorary girl, but he never accepted any invitations. I was lucky to have worked with him in Bracken as well as Glenroe. And it struck me that while Glenroe is a little frothier or a little more like light entertainment, Bracken, and Neil will remember this, had a kind of darker, grittier edge to it. And the character of Miley in those days was a lot more, he had more gravitas in a way. There was a real intelligence there, a real sensitivity, which wasn't so much brought to bear in his portrayal of Miley in Glenroe, because of course, once Wesley released the reins, and Wesley was responsible for creating Bracken and wrote a fair number of the episodes of Glenroe as well, of course. But when more scriptwriters were employed, of course, the character tends to adapt a little according to who's in charge of the script. And I think that from that rather brooding, solitary man that Miley was in Bracken, he turned into a bit more of a buffoon and was maybe more suited to light entertainment on a Sunday evening.
Neil, would you go along with that?
I would. In fact, I was trying to say that not quite so well.
Oh, thank you.
I wasn't able to formulate the thought properly, but I would agree with it, yeah. Yes.
Neil, take me back. I mean, a lot of listeners will obviously know that yourself and Miley We're together in Ballycasangel, together acting, of course. Take me back to when you first came across Mick. Was it back as far as the Druids in Galway in the mid-70s, or when did you get to know him first?
No, I would have met Mick originally in Radiwearne plays. I was a member of the Radiwearne rep, and because of my fluent Irish and the fact that I was reared in Irish and so forth, I was automatically shoved into all the Irish programmes, whether they were good, bad or indifferent. And outside of that, mostly they brought in people from outside whose Irish was good. And Mick, that was where I would have met Mick first, you know. Mm-hmm. And he would have been Micheál O'Leary, but, you know, and he was in a lot of the Irish plays where they needed people from outside. And that would be where I would have met him first. And he would have been quite young then, very, you know, he was probably in his
30s, probably, late 20s.
No, probably in his 20s.
In the 60s. Kate, Neil spoke there. 51551 is our text, by the way, for listeners if they'd like to get involved here. But Neil talked there about, I suppose, and he talked about it himself in the clip we heard in the News of One, about his kind of uncomfortableness with the whole fame thing and people coming up to him. And you remember an incident when he was in a pub one night, is that right?
Yes. He was in a pub in Galway. I think he was with Druid at the time, and he was trying to have a quiet pint on a Sunday evening, just sitting up at the bar. And of course, once people copped on that Mick was there, and he always tried his hardest to look unobtrusive, but of course, you know, it was pretty impossible. So long queues formed for autographs for, you know, aunties and uncles and cousins and nieces and nephews and all of that. And after about an hour of signing autographs, it was time to draw the line, and when eventually some fella came up to him and asked for yet another slew of autographs, Mick just said, "Look, I'm just trying to have a quiet pint here." Whereupon the man turned around to him, the stranger turned around to him and said, "Are you only an old curmudgeon?" And this was after Mick had shown great graciousness and patience signing autographs for all and sundry, you know. And people never really... I think people think that, for instance, when they say, "How are you, Miley?" or "Holy God" to him, that they'd be saying it for the first time. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he heard it every day of his life. And like me, Mick is a cyclist, or was a cyclist. And the danger of being a cyclist is, if you find yourself stopped at pedestrian lights or whatever, you're a sitting duck, because people can actually talk to you. You don't have to kind of roll down the car window. You know, people can be as past remarkable as they like. So he had that to contend with as well, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Chris is on the line there, 51551. Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon, Eamon. How are you?
Not bad. Mick Lally?
Yeah, very, very sad day. Very sad day, Eamon. I already heard this morning on the radio, and I just got a flashback to my time.
Right.
We used to watch him on a Sunday evening. The whole family would get together.
Yeah, I mean, it was an institution back then. For a generation like my generation in the 80s, getting ready for school on a Monday, the Glenroe theme would come on at, what, half eight on a Sunday evening. It kind of gave you that feeling you were going back to school. But it was one of, I suppose, along with Dallas to an extent, it was one of those institutional TV events on a weekly basis, which the whole family were...
It was the only thing that was on then, probably, as a great Irish programme, you know, and people had only one station at that time.
Yeah. I was just looking as well, Neil, the 31st of August is the day he died, and the 1st of August was the day that Joe Lynch passed away
in
2001.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Chris. Neil, can I just ask you... Yes, go ahead, Chris.
I was just wondering, the people who listen, the people who remember Mike Lally, I was just wondering, would he, you know, get onto RTE, and maybe it would be a good thing to have a repeat of Glenroe on the television.
Yeah, be better than some of the rubbish that's on some of our stations, wouldn't it? Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, well, we may get the full... How long was it, Kate? Was it 14 years? How many years was Glenroe on the go?
I was 18. Involved for 9. I think it was 15 years, and Bracken went out in 2 series of 6 hour-long episodes, so Bracken was 2 years.
Right.
So,
my God,
is that Eunice?
No, it's Chris there. Sorry, Chris.
I think it was 15 years, but right. As I say, I was only involved for 9 of those.
Yeah. Okay, as I said, Neil, just coming back to you on something, you say that, you know, if he dies as a young man, having achieved an awful lot, was there anything else, though, he could have achieved? Was he underrated? Was he undervalued in the industry at all, do you think?
Well, that's a very hard one to say, because Mick was to a certain extent, Miley was an extension of his own character, you know, because, I mean, it was based very much on what, probably on some younger man, you know, that he remembered from his youth, you know. But, I mean, he was a very solid actor, and I suppose part of the trouble about playing Miley was that it, because, you know, he was so good at it that people didn't offer him anything else. You know, you become so well known as something that if you're produced, or if you're sort of mentioned for some other part, the directors almost automatically went, no, he's Miley. That's, you know.
So yeah, he was typecast in a way.
Yeah. Well, it's not even typecasting; it's name casting. Right. And every time he'll come on, everybody will say, "Oh, there's Miley." You see.
Yeah. Well, again, that's a tribute.
It's supposed to be Sherlock Holmes, and everybody says he's Miley, you know, and it's not much.
Well, again, you say that's a tribute to the way he played the role. And, you know, I mentioned Joe Lynch there. I mean, the relationship that he forged on TV, the Miley-Dinny relationship, was brilliant when you think about it. Like, it is a relationship which probably even today exists on farms between the father and the son, and always did.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that is that Joe was always a great man to get sympathy for his character, and in the original in Bracken, he was a snake, an absolute horror, you know, conniving, you know. But once he got into the new series, and the storyline changed, and the actor, you know, there was more of an accent on the Miley character and the other. Joe reinvented Dinny as a, you know, a lovely, affable old man who was maybe too fond of a couple of pints. But in the original thing, he was a complete snake.
But as he got older, he mellowed, and they began to feel sorry for him, having to deal with this thick young fellow of a son chasing women and all of that sort of thing, and taking all his money away from him that it was hard earned over the years. Yeah. But just stay with me, Neil. You're very kind to stay with us, because we're getting lots of texts. 51551 and emails from fans of I was almost going to say Miley, but of Mick Lally all over the country. Rosalind is there. Good afternoon, Rosalind.
Hello, it's Rosalind.
Rosalind,
hello, Damien.
Sorry,
how are you?
I'm very good. Go ahead.
That's good. I know it's just a sad loss to the theatre, I think, Damien. We pass on our sympathies to Mick's wife and family. But he was a lovely actor, just a very natural actor, you know, and lovely. You know, any of the productions that you would see, he just seemed to slot in to any of the roles that he did. But I suppose we do tend to swing back, don't we, to Glen Rowe.
Yes.
And what my call, the purpose of my call today was, you know, I just think it would be absolutely terrific, and I think people would love it, would be a rerun of Glen Rowe. On television.
Yeah,
I think.
You know, it would be great to. I mean, there are probably a younger generation out there, you know, who.
Yes. Well, Damien, I
would not know, but as I said, it was an institution in Ireland. There's no doubt about it. For so long, and, you know, I remember all the characters' names. I'm in my mid-30s now or whatever, but it was an institution back in the 80s
and
the 90s.
And we saw a shot of it there, I think, Damien, recently, didn't we? We saw, I think it was the Reeling in the Years, I think we saw a little clip there some time back. But certainly, of course, I mean, I know from the dated aspect of it, but it's certainly a different Ireland to what we know today, but I think that would be part of the charm.
I know that, but Kate is still there with us. Kate, I mean, people might have this impression, people that weren't fans of Glen Rowe or didn't follow it, that it was this kind of camellia of a programme, but it did reflect in Ireland.
It did
touch on the issues, the social issues of its time, Kate, didn't it?
That's right. Well, what they managed to marry was they had a great balance between having a character-driven plot and having an issue-driven plot, so that what happened in Glen Rowe was that people knew the characters intimately and got to either love or hate them, and they would occasionally rear an issue. And that way it would be fodder for people like yourself, Damien, or for Joe on Liveline,
to be able to discuss the issues of the day after having seen them aired in soap opera format on a Sunday evening. So, it's, you know, things did come to light that, that might not otherwise have become part of a public forum. That, you know, a lot was raised for discussion as a result of soap operas like Glenroe.
All right, stay with me. 51551. Saraj is there. Is that right, Saraj? I hope.
Saraj.
I'm getting all the pronunciations wrong, but you forgive me for that. Go ahead. You worked with Mick, Saraj, yes?
Yes, indeed. Years ago, when I got my first break on Glenroe, Mick and myself worked on a couple of episodes I had. In the early 80s when I had a restaurant, a Turkish restaurant, actually, in Glenroe was the location.
Mm-hmm.
And Wesley Burrow has created my character there. And the first scene was with McLally and Miley Byrne, as well as known, and Biddy and another Hollywood actor who is now very well known is Brendan Gleeson.
Yes.
So we were there, and I was a bit nervous to work with this huge name in Ireland, you know, that it's a McLally, oh my God, I'm working with him and all that. But he was so kind and supportive, and he said, look, no, just get on with the script, and you have the lines, and you have, you know. Over the years, then I came to know him well, because I wrote another script myself, Honey and Saffron, that when I wanted to make a feature film. And I offered Mick a part of a father of a girl, which he loved. He said, Dick, it's a great part. I'd love to play it. But unfortunately, the project got into trouble as usual. The films do get into trouble. We never get to make that film. But as a human being, as I've been hearing about him, my heart is sinking as I think about this wonderful man, a fellow actor, a beautiful man, and a colleague, I would say. I saw him on the stage. You know, very close to him in terms of, I used to see him on the stage, whatever he performed, whenever he performed, I was there watching him and meeting him, and maybe after joining him for a pint or so. But that life, you know, I mean, 64, what's 64 years these days?
I know, it's very, very young.
A great loss for the Irish acting talent,
sure.
I must say that.
All right, okay, listen, thanks for that, Saraj. Neil, just coming back again, a lot of people, you know, will tend to forget as well that the Druid, I mean, is now a world famous, you know, theatre. It's a success, it's travelled the world. And he was part of the three-person team along with Gary Hines and Marie back in 75 to set that up. It's a wonderful legacy to him, isn't it?
It is, and it's wonderful in you know, the internationally famous and so on. And Gary Hines, if she's listening, will be smiling because I refused to do a show with Druid when I was offered it many, many years ago, and then they became world famous. But then so did I, so I'm not complaining.
You did indeed. Anyway,
I simply didn't want to leave Dublin. As that, and. So I gave some other excuse, I don't know, but that was the reason. And so then, you know, many years after, when I see them all winning prizes on Broadway, and I'd say, well...
Oh, what might have been, but you didn't do too bad anyway, Neil.
Oh, well, no, I didn't. No.
Yeah, and again, I suppose, when did you speak with Mick last? Did you keep in touch with him, or...?
Well, I would meet him casually every now and again. I suppose about 3 or 4 months ago that I met him casually somewhere, you know.
And how was he, Neil? I mean, we don't know what we heard. He was in hospital, but did you know he was ill? Was this a big shock to you?
You know, even if Mick was ill and on a downer, he'd still be very affable, and you know, he'd still get the great warm greeting from him. You know, he was very, very. Very affectionate and very warm person, you know.
And
he wouldn't be going around with his troubles on his sleeve, you know.
Yeah, but did he have troubles? I'm not getting too invasive here, but I mean, when it comes to acting, there's a lot of, you know, frustrated people out there, and you know, they probably feel that they didn't get the right breaks that they should have got, be it in RTE or be it on television or wherever else. But I get the impression that with Mick, he was just such a consummate professional. He loved acting. He took what came before him.
Yeah.
He wasn't in it for the money as such, I suppose. He wasn't in it for the fame. He just loved...
Well, I can tell you, if he was in it for the money, he wouldn't have been in RTE, that's for sure, because, I mean... Nobody made money ever by,
yeah.
Nobody became a millionaire by working for RTE, and you know, I'm sure he was he must have felt every now and again that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't being paid what he was worth, or that he didn't get the sort of recognition. He got recognition from everybody who ever watched him, of course he did, but I mean, maybe he felt that he deserved more recognition from the station and more. I don't know whether he did or not, because he always seemed to me to be in good, pretty good humour, or upbeat anyway, you know. And he, I suppose, RTE sort of tends not to lionise its best people, you know what I mean? Try and keep them down as much as possible, because we might have to pay them more money.
I don't think. I mean, I interviewed her. I met her. I was down on the farm with Mary McAvoy. Was it last year sometime as well? And I suppose she kind of referred to that, what you're talking about there as well. Neil, just before we go to the break, I just want to bring Michael in Dublin in. Michael, go ahead.
I just want to pay my condolences to our mixed family. I met him there, it was 2 years ago now, and he was Grafton Street. And honest to God, the man, there was an aura about the man. He's just a lovely man to talk to. There was no airs of graces about the man. To me, he was a man of the world, because even listening to the way he was talking, he could talk about anything. But I felt myself, after walking away from the man, like I've seen him in plays and all after that and before that, but I think his talent was wasted here. I think he would have been huge, huge in America.
Really?
It's true what I think Neil Tobin is saying. There's another great actor. And as I said, they're really and truly now, all the great actors are sort of, I don't mean to be rude, but a lot of them are sort of being just sort of put aside. It's times like these we remember them, when they either pass away or something comes up and we see their reruns on the television. But I think Mick Lally, for me, was really, he epitomised the farms, the west of Ireland, the whole concept of what farming was like, even though he was only playing the role. I never knew what farming was like down the country, what it was like to live on a farm. But watching Glenroe every week, it really, you know, it really brought it home. I went down to see Glenroe, to see where it was filmed, Kilcool. And I was a bit taken back, because it was a little bit different than what I expected, you know. But as an actor himself, brilliant. And I watching him perform on stage, when he comes on stage, he sort of goes into a trance. Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah.
He sort of just stands there, and he sort of looks out. You think he was looking at you or the audience, but the character starts to take over him then. Brilliant. Absolutely no. You really have to be a professional actor to do that.
All right. And as you said, you met him and...
lovely man. Lovely, lovely man. No airs of graces about him. Didn't turn around and say, oh, sorry, I'm famous, I have to go. None of that crap. And that's what I love about actors. Neil Tobin is the same. I remember many, many years ago, a friend of mine was getting married, and Neil wouldn't remember this, but he signed a little a thing for the wedding, my friend's wedding. Good luck on your wedding day. I thought that said it all for me.
All right. Well, of course, Neil, well loved as well all over the country. Michael, thank you very much indeed.
And bye,
I'm going to let Kate and Neil go now. Neil, how will he feel if he is up at the pearly gates, going, scratching his head, going, "Holy God, I didn't think he existed. Never believed I'd be here." But if there is an afterlife and he's there and he's looking down, he'd be the sort of man who would be a little bit uncomfortable, would he? I know we say it about a lot of people that are humble, but get the impression that he was that humble, not eccentric in the sense of being an egotist, as is the case probably with some people in your profession, but just a normal, humble sort of guy.
He had no airs or graces at all. He was a plain, straightforward guy. But actually, since you mentioned the religious thing, when the Pope came to Ireland, that was in the middle of Bracken, and we were going. It was suggested that we should have no rehearsals on that day. And Mick said, "Why?" And because the Pope was coming that day, and for once in his life, Mick became an orange man. And you know what he said about the Pope?
Well, what did he say?
Well, you know what the orange man said, the
right.
Pope, you know. Four-letter the Pope. You know?
Right, right.
Yeah, but we anyway, the rehearsals were cancelled.
Yeah, and I think there's he did an interview, could have been with Ryan Tubridy, I'm not sure, when he talked about, you know, all the houses with the papal flag hanging out back in 79 and what he thought of that at the time. And probably wasn't an unusual stance Well, not unusual, but a fairly brave stance for somebody in a public figure like him at that stage, with so many fans, would say that would have been, you know, of a Catholic way,
yeah, but I mean,
and so on. But to wear his feeling on his sleeve at that stage, I mean, now it's nothing, but at that stage back then, it was a brave thing for him to do.
Well, I don't know if he ever said that publicly, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen. I'm going to leave it there.
Anyway, listen. Yes. Before I go, he was a great man. He was a great friend. He was a true. You know, he was an adornment to Ireland. That's all I can say. And he was a great man. God be and God be good to him if he's there.
All right, we leave it there. Yeah. From one great actor to. In talking about another one, Neil Tabeen, thank you very much for talking to us, and Kate Thompson, and to Eunice, and to all our other callers. Back up more after these.
1850 715 815.
Do you know, I was watching last night on BBC Two, great Irish entertainer Dara O'Brien. Was never really a fan as such, didn't pass much remarks from him, was flicking over, and one of his concerts at the Theatre Royal was on BBC Two as part of his sellout tour of Ireland and the UK. And I was thinking to myself, 2,500 English people there last night looking at this quintessential Irish man doing a brilliant job entertaining and saying, you know, with all the bad news that there is about this country and our reputation around the world with the banks and all of that sort of thing, wasn't it great to see, you know, what is good about this country, as in wonderful entertainment and a great comedian like Dara O'Brien entertaining the masses over there in a big place like the Theatre Royal in England. And then today we're here talking about another wonderful ambassador for Ireland who passed away in Mick Lally. And queues of people lining up here on our phone lines wanting to pay tribute to him. Some who met him, others who just admired watching his work on stage and on screen as well. But Ken Doyle is in Cove in Cork. Good afternoon, Ken.
Hi, Damien.
You met him because you worked in Dublin in Bewley's Cafe, and he was a regular visitor.
He was. He was in, well, the shortest time he was ever in between times was about 2 weeks, but Bewley's coffee shop there was a really huge building, and I was a security guard, and I sort of had to keep an eye on everybody, and we had a lot of celebrities coming in and out, and for the coffee and some of the food was fantastic, and that's probably what kept me in the building, really,
right,
working
right
there.
But he used it as a kind of, I mean, no better place than Bewley's there with its tradition and all of that, particularly it's staged many plays in its own time as well, but he used it there as a kind of a rehearsal hub, is that right?
Sort of, yes.
For himself.
In the back of the main building there where you picked up the food, there was upstairs a balcony at the back, and the sort of dimly lit, and people could relax in there. And he would come in often with a fair amount of paperwork or a folder. I can't specifically remember what it was, but I can remember what he wore and stuff, you know. Mm. And he would get his head into that quickly. But I always thought to myself that, well, you could see that he wanted to be on his own, really, and just sort of mingling with the crowd. But he would give you a nod or a big glowing smile would just appear out of nowhere. It was like sort of like, hi, how are you? The weather's bad out there today, and then he'd head off up the stairs. But I don't know, it was just one of these things where I felt a big friendliness from him instantly, even though I didn't know him, if that just sounds a bit...
I know what you're saying. There was a friendly touch to him. He had a greeting for everybody, is what you're saying. And
absolutely, yeah.
When you're saying you remember what he looked like, I mean, I doubt if he pulled up in a limo outside and got out with a three-piece suit on him and dark glasses and bodyguards or anything like that.
No. He always wore jeans and often a woolly jumper. Yeah. And sometimes an anorak, quite a big anorak, and he'd have quite a bunch of paperwork with him. And he'd run off up the stairs quickly, I'd say, like any other celebrity, in case he got spotted, sort of move.
Sure. And did you remember him on TV as well, Ken? Were you a Glenn Rowe follower?
Yeah. Religiously watched it every night. And every time I saw him come into the cafe, I would sort of think, I remember Dinny with the old leg, and the old leg would always kick in and all that, you know.
Stay with me. They're nice words, nice memories from you, Ken, there in Bewley's and Grafton Street in Dublin. 51551 our text. Mary is also in Cork. Good afternoon, Mary.
Good afternoon, Dinny.
You're calling, you remember him, I suppose, more for his work on the stage, and in particular one of John B. Keane's wonderful plays.
The Year of the Hiker.
Yeah.
It was totally unrelated to his portrayal of Miley. Now, in Glenroe and that, you know. He was a totally different character in this, and he had total command of the role, you know.
Mm. What sort of a character hiker. Did he play in
He was a hiker yeah. who left home as a young man, left his family and his wife and everything, and travelled around the world. And then when he came back in later years, he was rejected. And sort of a battle axe in the home place. And he was just magic in it, you know. It was certainly, for me, it was his finest hour, you know.
Right, and that stands out as a memory for you.
Oh, where, it was brilliant, yeah. you know.
Where was it, in the Opera House in Cork, was it?
It was in the Opera House, but I was hoping to see it build somewhere else, and I would have gone to see it again because it was such a convincing portrayal, you know.
Yeah, and Mary, when was that?
I'd say it was about 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
And he was just the finest of fine actors, you know.
Yeah. Well, Brendan Carney is on the line from Longford. Good afternoon to you, Brendan.
Damien, how are you? It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, and I mean, we know the backstage there in Longford as well.
Fantastic facility, Damien.
Yeah.
Great.
And I mean, Mick would have played there as well.
Well, Damien, can I just preface some remarks by saying, actually, my deepest sympathy to his family, wife and children. I've never met the man in my life, but his humanity touched me in a way I'll explain to you, that he was in Longford, and I wouldn't be a great theatre goer, but it was actually a friend of mine, John Kelly, related the story to me recently on the death of my brother. Unfortunately, he passed away about 2 weeks ago.
I'm sorry, Taylor.
Sorry, a month ago. But anyway, the story was that he was a great fan of Mick Lally's, and Mick was rehearsing in the backstage for the show on the night, and John Kelly, who would be actually very much involved in the backstage, was there, and he was saying to Mick Lally how this man was a great fan of his, and he was in a nursing home just outside of Longford, a place called Laurel Lodge, a fine establishment, mm-hmm. and he said he would love if he had 5 minutes. So as it transpired, Mick Lally went out with John to the Laurel Lodge nursing home. He must have went around every person that was in the nursing home, even the little community or assembly centre, and spent about an hour with my brother, Mick Carney. Now, if you look at it, it was like talking to the president, in actual fact.
Ah, lovely memory,
Mick was telling me the story after. Now, a man with such demands on him, such a fantastic actor. I used to enjoy him, actually. I don't tell him I would have seen Mick Lally, would have been on Glenroe, and I really used to enjoy it. But the humanity of the man touched me in a way it's very difficult to describe, because this is something this man, it was nothing in the local papers, because nobody ever went to the papers. This man done this on a Sunday afternoon of his own bat, spent time with people less fortunate than himself. And for that, I'm ever grateful. I will always remember his kindness and humanity, some people who were ill. So it was just, and it came to mind, and I couldn't believe this morning, a young man at that age, and God be good to him, is all I can say. He certainly, from where I'm coming from, it was a fantastic tribute to the man's humanity as a decent man.
Yeah, yeah, that's what's coming through everywhere, you know. There's nobody that has anything else but kind words to say about him. And again, your dear brother, your late brother, Mick, met him, and it meant so much to him.
About it afterwards, and anybody that came, sure, Mick Lally was out here, and Mickey would be a great connoisseur of fine whiskies, and there was a little drop in a bottle, and you look at the conversation, and between the two of them, and they had a jar and enjoyed it. I mean, it was like you gave him the lotto. Now wouldn't have meant as much to Mickey, God be good to him, but I will always remember Mick Lally for his kindness and his humanity in that case. And as I said, it was nothing got to do with advertising, it was absolutely nothing. This man done this on a Sunday evening and had to go back to, actually that night, and do his play. But it was something that I'll always remember, and God be good to him is all I can say. We'll say a prayer for him.
We will indeed. Well, Brendan in Longford, thanks, and Ken in Cove, thank you very much indeed. 51551 our text, and on this sad day for Mick Lally, his family, and for Irish acting and for Ireland in general, I'm delighted to say on the line from Maryland, USA, Gabriel Byrne. Good afternoon to you.
Hello, Damien. How are you?
When did you hear the news, Gabriel?
This morning, a couple of hours ago.
And as I said, everybody that's been on speaking about what a sad day it is for not only for acting in Ireland, for the business and the profession you're in, but for the country in general. What are your memories, Gabriel, of Mick going away back to your Bracken days in particular?
Oh, well, I mean, I've known Mick for so long. We actually worked together before Bracken. We worked at the Abbey in a production of Dermot and Grainne, in which I think that was Mick's maybe first job in Dublin. It was certainly one of my very first jobs. And we had both come from other fields and were trying out this new acting game to see if we could get away with it. And then we worked at the Gaiety together in Borstal Boy. Mm. So I knew Mick before Bracken, so we had this kind of a very... we had a lovely relationship before that. And it transferred, I think, into the work that we did in Bracken. I saw that script... excuse me, there's just some noise here. I saw that script before Mick, you know, put his indelible mark on it. And like everything that he did, he brought a tremendous humanity and compassion to that role. And I think that people identified with his humanity, his accessibility. I mean, it sounds like a banality to say that Mick Lally was, you know, one of the most decent people I have ever met in my life. He was just a tremendously good man, full of care and humanity. And I think it must be a dreadful, dreadful day for his wife Peggy and for his family, but. I think of all the you know, the conversations I had with Mick about life and about you know, just the things that you talk about. You know, I remember one day we sat on the canal bank after a rehearsal of Bracken, and we talked for must have been 6 hours, just sitting there talking about life and families and. Just the ordinary things. And the last time I saw Mick was I was back in Dublin, and for my birthday a few months ago, Mick was there, and he sang in that great voice of his, sang a beautiful song in Irish, and I'm glad that we had that day because I didn't know that was the last time I was going to see him.
Yeah. And I suppose when you talk about him as a man and an actor as well, somebody said earlier on in the programme that they didn't think that he achieved his full potential. Now, Neil Tobin said he'd probably die as a happy man that all he did achieve on stage and on screen. But do you think that he missed out, I suppose, on you know, a broader possibilities in acting, like the way yourself and Brendan Gleeson, I suppose, have moved on to the States and to Hollywood and all of that? Or would Mick just have scoffed at that idea of going into...
I don't think you can define a person's achievements by where they were and what city they lived in, or whether they did this film or that film. Mick was a great actor, full stop. It doesn't matter whether he was in Hollywood or whether he was in Wicklow. He was just a great actor. And if you look at his work, the work itself comes from deep inside him. And this, the idea that somehow he didn't fulfill a potential, I think it does him a disservice. Mm. Mick gave everything to every role that he played, whether it was on stage or on screen, and his unique self was something that was when you saw Mick Lally perform, you knew that you were watching something that nobody else had. It was out of the soul of Mick, whether he was doing Eugene O'Neill or Bracken or John B. Keane. It was always Mick that was coming there. So no, I wouldn't agree with that notion that he didn't fulfill his potential.
Yeah. It's such a young age, such a young age, Gabriel, as well, you know, 64. Were you aware, I mean, were you surprised when you heard that he had died today? Were you aware that he'd been in hospital very briefly in the last few days? How much of a shock did it come to you to hear the news?
Well, I knew that Mick had been ill, and, you know, 64 is too young to die. It seems, you know, when I think back on that Bracken program, which seemed to be when we filmed that in summer in 1980, I can't remember the exact year, but yeah. Peter Caffrey, Sean Lawler, Jim Fitzgerald, Joe Lynch, who all starred in that show with me in that, you know, summer of
1980, 30 years ago.
They're all dead. Excuse me. They're dead, and they're men that went way before their time. I think of their, you know, their the loss to their families and to their friends. But, you know, Mick was really beloved by the country. And he was, in his way, an icon. I remember one day I met him in Camden Street, and he was on his bicycle. And a couple of guys stopped in their car and shouted out the window, you know, but the car guy, as the play was called, Pat Barry, and he was called Miley, of course, and they were shouting out, "Hey, Pat, Miley, any chance of a few mushrooms there?" And Mick turned to me and he said, "Jesus, there's a price to be paid for everything." a long-suffering look he had in his eyes, but he took it all. You know, I think he, you know, there was a part of him that loved being that character, and there was a part of him that wanted to escape from it too. You know, like most actors, you know. Yeah. But Damien, would you mind if I just it just ran through my mind when I heard of Mick this morning. That there's a Shakespeare sonnet that kind of sums up the way I feel about Mick. And if you wouldn't mind, it'll just take a few seconds to read. Would it be okay?
I'd love you to do that, Gabriel.
It's sonnet 30. sorry, guys, I'll be there in a sec. Okay. When to the sessions of sweet silent thought I summon up remembrance of things past. I sigh the lack of many a thing I sought, and with old woes new wail my dear time's waste. Then can I drown an eye unused to flow for precious friends hid in death's dateless night, and weep afresh love's long since cancelled woe, and moan the expense of many a vanished sight. Then can I grieve at grievances foregone, and heavily from woe to woe tell o'er the sad account of four bemoaned moan, which I knew pay as if not paid before. But if the while I think on thee, dear friend, all losses are restored and sorrows end.
Gabriel Byrne, you're a gentleman, and thank you very much indeed for speaking to us from New York about your great, great friend, Mick Nally. Nora, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
Not bad, Nora. Your mother...
No, I'm just ringing just to put a little comment about Mick Lally. As I say, he'd be sadly missed. He was such a beautiful person. Now, my mother was an actress. Her name was Maureen O'Sullivan, and she played Anne Flory in Glenroe for a good few years.
A very well-known and well-loved actress indeed, Maureen O'Sullivan.
Thank you.
And we remember Anne Flory too. All these names are coming back, aren't they?
They are indeed.
How would your mother, I suppose, what did she think of Mick, and how did they get on?
Oh, they got on so well. She thought, as I say, such a gentleman, such a lovely person. I remember she was at one of the shows and she admired his Aran sweater that he was wearing, and he got two made for her within 2 weeks. He arrived in with she'd asked for one for herself, but he got one. He also got one made for my father. But a little incident. He had his own chat show. I don't know if you remember that for a while on RTE television. And the first person he invited in for an interview was my mother. Now, in all the years, as say, the Late Late Show was going, she was never asked, and I was always asking her about that. And when Mick asked her, Mick Lally asked her to come in to be interviewed on his chat show, she was over the moon. But unfortunately, she was very, very nervous. Now, you know, even though she'd been an actress for so many years on the stage, now she was so nervous about this. And we all went in, we were in the audience for the interview, and he made her so at home. He had her so relaxed, it was unbelievable. It was lovely.
All right.
And we have that now on video. We have all the video recording of it. You know, we were given it by RTE. You know, after my mother died, they were very good to us and gave us a good few of their
That's something
things.
To cherish, Nora. And, you know, the first lesson we learn in journalism, if in doubt, leave out. Am I right in saying that, isn't it in Boyle County Roscommon, is there a connection with Maureen O'Sullivan?
No, Mum, it's from Kenmare.
Kenmare, right. Okay, in Kenmare County, Kerry. But there's something that tells me about a connection in Boyle. I could be wrong, but of course we all remember Maureen O'Sullivan, the wonderful actress that she was, and of course, as you said, the role that she played so brilliantly in Glenroe as Aunt Florrie. And that's a lovely memory to have of the two of them there, that little conversation that they had on that show. But thanks indeed, Nora, for contacting us.
Thank you indeed, okay.
All right, I'm paying that tribute. Peter Kelly is on the line. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Damien. How are you doing?
Good.
Now, just something simple. I moved to Kilcool back in the 80s, you know. And
that's where Glenroe was
neighbours
shot
down the road where the farm where they used to film Glenroe. So I used to take the kids down just for a ramble, and we'd actually watch them filming. But I was always impressed by how nice a man Mick Lally was, a real gentleman, the matter. You know, he acted so naturally when he went on the set and then come back and have the crack with you and all, you know. And then I met him a few times at different events, like the field days, and he'd always turn up and he'd just be sitting there like one of the boys. And just to say, you know, he always impressed me, like, you know, by his naturalness and everything, you know.
Bernie is there as well. Bernie, good afternoon. You met, like Peter,
absolutely,
you met Mick.
Yeah,
you met him very recently.
It was very harrowing because I was on, excuse me, a little bit emotional. I was on the bus a few weeks ago coming up from town, and he got on at the Thomas Street bus stop. A lovely, lovely man. I always idolised him anyway. We never went out for a drink Sunday night until Glenroe was finished, no matter if cold hail, high low, or hot water. That was it. But he was sat across from me, and there was a bit of a naughty carry-on going on in one of the seats, and he just looked over at me, and I looked over at him, a little drug dealer, you know, and we just threw our eyes up to the sky. But I went rooting in my bag to get something out of my bag, and when I got up to look at him again, he was gone. So I don't know whether he was going into James's or going over just to visit somebody. But I've met him several times around the Crumlin Shopping Centre, and that. It's just so spooky. I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. Now, lovely, lovely gentleman, beautiful. Loved him. Loved him in Glenroe.
All right.
Actually adored him now. But God made me condolences now to his family and all his wide circle of friends and everything. Just not to. Very sad, isn't it?
It is.
Isn't
Eamon's there in Dublin 7. Bernie, thanks for that, Eamon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Damien.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, first of all, sympathy to Joe's, or to Mick's family. I've no doubt he was a great family man, and I met him a few times, and his son, a very nice young man as well. But a few things may be overlooked about Mick. Mick was a great singer as well, as Gabriel Byrne reminded us there. He was a fine singer, and he did a few recordings which maybe could be rooted out. And I met him in Whelan's a few times in Camden Street, and he was a great lover of especially old American country music and stuff like that. And I saw him at Ramblin' Jack Elliott some time back there, and he reminded me very much of Christy Hennessy. Like, he was a very self-effacing, with no ideas about himself at all, no big ideas, and yet he had all this underlying talent, and that's my memory of him.
Well, my apologies to the many people that are waiting on the line to pay their tributes to Mick Lally. We thank you for contacting us in so many numbers today. Our deepest sympathy extended, of course, to his wife Peggy, to his children Salogue, Darragh and Magnus as well. The programme today was produced by Circuit Glacken.